Greetings. You are now listening to the McAfee Croncast. Stand by for your hosts, Brian Murphy and Doug Bruzzoni. They will be discussing your favorite baseball squadron, the San Francisco Giants. Take it away, Brian and Doug.
All right, it's July 6th, and we took a little pause for 4th of July, but we're back. Brian Murphy, Doug Bruzzoni, we're here to talk about the Giants, our favorite subject. Well, after myself, the Giants are my second favorite subject. Doug, how the heck are you? How was your 4th of July?
It was great. I ate too much food and saw a few things blow up, and that's America.
Yeah, that's America. I had a hamburger or cheeseburger. I had a cheeseburger every single day starting Friday, and I think I had two cheeseburgers a day through yesterday. So I'm probably
nicely done.
Yeah, I probably won't eat a cheeseburger again for at least a week. But it was great. And yes, God bless America. Hopefully you haven't switched off since I said the word God. I apologize to those who are offended by that word. Anyway, let's talk about something less offensive but more disgusting. And let's talk about how the Giants started their week last week. If you saw it at all, the Giants basically they faced Oakland and were basically left a smoking crater where baseball used to be.
If you saw it, sorry.
Yeah. our condolences from us, not from the Giants would never apologize for some reason, but that was pretty bad. The Bay Bridge series and the Giants basically brought a bag of farts to a tank fight. I don't know. So in the first game of the series, Jeff Samardzija was just destroyed 8-3. I think he gave up a home run to Billy Beane himself, who was coming down to the field just by accident to make a trade, like a midnight snack. And he actually saw a fastball from Jeff Samardzija coming in, and he hit it out of the park.
What happened is he told Ron Washington, hitting a home run off Jeff Samardzija is not that hard. And Ron Washington was like, it's incredibly hard, because that's his catchphrase. So Billy Beane homered off him because it's not that hard.
That's right. And it's not because Billy Beane disrespects Wash. It's that this one time he knew he could prove him wrong. And then 13-11, the second game of the series, the bullpen was obliterated. So they're all dead. They don't exist anymore.
Think about this game. Don't ever think about this game again. That's my advice to you, everyone out there in the universe.
If you didn't watch the game and you didn't catch any of the press coverage,
congratulations.
Which, great. But you missed this humdinger of a fact, and that is that, as Grant was able to find out, it was one of the worst losses in the history of the franchise, based on the Giants just giving up run after run and having a lead, and it was all a mess, and it was all terrible, and may God have mercy on the Giants' soul. By the way, the Giants were outscored at AT&T Park 21-14. And it wasn't even that close. then you get to Oakland, and the Giants just the defense falls apart. Then, even though Jake Peavy was pitching, but still the A's just beat the holy snot out of the Giants 7-1. And then it took Madison Bumgarner pitching for the bleeding to stop, and the Giants barely won. They salvaged the game in the 4-game series in Oakland. And that was a 12-6 win. They barely won that one. And they probably barely won it because Madison Bumgarner was the DH.
Yeah, exactly. Madison Bumgarner was like, you know what? This team's going to be miserable. They're going to be miserable with me making them, just like holding them up, dragging them to a win, despite everything that they're trying to do.
So now we've covered all four of those games sort of in general. Not going through all the pains of it. Now let's just talk about it sort of like, thematically, or what it means, because I think there is some interesting things to discuss from the games that aren't necessarily play-by-play, although I say that. In the first game, this was kind of a week where Bochy kind of punted. It was glaring, at least to me it was, that in the first game of the series, for example, I believe that was when he left Stratton in to pinch hit. And the Giants, it was already 7-1, I think, or 6-1 at this point. And the Giants, you know, were not going to win that game. The A's had demoralized them. But rather than send in a pitch hitter, he let Stratton hit, and Stratton predictably grounded into a double play. So it was an interesting call, because who knows, a pinch hitter might have done something different in that situation. Certainly the bullpen wasn't like totally fresh. But instead, you know, leaving Stratton out there to just take a beating was the better call, apparently. And so that was one part that that caught my eye of like, oh, maybe Bochy wasn't, he didn't really care. Like he got it. They were just pulverized. And I feel like the other thing also was sort of that Bumgarner being the DH was at least in part formed out of like, you know what, screw it. Nothing else is going to work at this point. So might as well just go for it and see what happens. And if it works out, it might reinvigorate the team. And if it doesn't work out, it wasn't like we were going to win that game anyway, is how it came off to me.
So to me, I would say that the Stratton thing was more about protecting his bullpen. You know, that Giants were in a stretch of playing 20 games in a row, which is a stretch they're still in right now, playing games for 20 days in a row, which is very tough. So he was probably thinking, you know, I want to have my bullpen fresh. And it worked. The bullpen was incredibly fresh for the next game, and they were all terrible.
That's right.
So I guess it could have been worse. Yeah. I guess they could have lost, instead of 13-11, they could have lost like 26-11, maybe. Because the bullpen gave up a lot of runs and not a lot of innings.
They gave up 8 runs in the last 2 innings. It was really bad.
So he was doing his best to put them in a position to succeed. And the bullpen was like, no, we insist.
Let's talk about the 13-11 game real quick, because, again, certain things that you could pull from that we can still talk about. I guess we can say Casilla's season is, he's not the same Casilla at this point. We can safely say he's not the same Casilla of years past. He's still definitely the best reliever in the bullpen, but I would say the margin is closing, and Corey Guerin is probably catching up to him. But in this 13-11 game, Corey Guerin was bad. Josh Osich was somehow good, despite having a really bad week for the most part. Javier Lopez is like, he's, let's just pretend he retired. Like, what's what's the harm in doing that? Like, if we just all acted like he wasn't on the team, like all the beat reporters just asked that question, like, who's going to replace Lopez now that he's gone, just to see what would happen. I guess it would be considered unprofessional, but he is basically pitching like he doesn't exist, or certainly that he doesn't belong. And to the extent that Bochy finally did use him over the weekend in Arizona, but he's reticent to do it, clearly.
Yeah, and he should be, because Javier Lopez has been very bad this year. And that was the latest example. And, you know, the guys who did the best, you know, Osich, you already mentioned, but Strickland and Derek Law each got one out, faced one batter. I think it's pretty fair to say that maybe Law should have been there in a little higher leverage situation than Contos, for example, who there was a misplay behind him, Connor Gillespie, if I'm remembering right. But still, you don't want George Contos out there when there are runners on and you have a lead to protect. You want Derek Law, because Derek Law is better.
And even I will begrudgingly say maybe, or definitely, Hunter Strickland at this point over Contos. I don't know about Strickland over Law, but, you know, I know that in the depth chart, that's not going to happen, that Law is going to jump Strickland just yet. So, I mean, just to talk about this series, you know, in the end, basically, all the shaky points are still there for the Giants. The pitching is a problem. Credit to the offense, though, for being good when, as Grant pointed out, they had a third of the lineup is like guys they got through emergency depth, who are all surprisingly first-round picks, former first-round picks for the most part, that are hanging in there. I mean, I don't know what else to say. The Giants are able to score runs still, and it, in a lot of ways it reminds me of sort of 2000 to 2004, where they can score, but oh my God, they can't pitch. They cannot pitch. It's terrible. I think it's basically Bumgarner, Cueto, and then Suarez will give you five or six, you know, as a fifth starter, which is fine. I'm going to throw Peavy in there, but I'm essentially ranking the rotation though. Bumgarner, Cueto, Suarez, I'd still put over Peavy. But then Peavy is definitely on that list. And then kind of Guerin and kind of Casilla. And then after that, everyone else, it's not quite a question mark. It's just more like you definitely probably upgrade all of those parts immediately. Osich, I'll put as sort of like in pencil as being on this list as well, because he still throws 94, and when he doesn't come out and just issue a four pitch walk immediately, he has been quite solid in almost a Guerin-esque way, but he is very frustrating and very inconsistent.
And Guerin's been pretty inconsistent lately too.
Yes, I would say the last couple of weeks he's been very inconsistent, considering that.
Which, I mean, that could be overuse. That could be, you know, because his arm, he last year he was coming off Tommy John surgery. He didn't get that many innings in the minors or the majors. And this year, you know, he's been a very heavily used player, and that could be showing up because Bochy's had no choice but to use him all the time. Because what the hell else is he going to do? Right. Throw a contest out there for more innings? Nobody wants that.
Right, and these are all guys who other organizations didn't want. And so for a variety of reasons, and, you know, the Giants thinking they can fix them or whatever it is, but, you know, essentially just, you know, they have flaws. They have flaws baked into them when the Giants got them. And even though they've been able to work through them to be well, the warts are showing quite a bit lately. I mean, I want to go back real quick. I like jumping around in the series as opposed to going game through game, because this is actually helping me remember more for some reason. But Javier Lopez facing Jake Smolinski in the first game, I mean, that was almost a white flag situation, a lefty versus a righty. And Bochy had a comment where he just thought, I didn't think Smolinski was going to crush Javier Lopez in that situation, which I thought was pretty funny as well. I wasn't counting on a home run in that situation. And that's an interesting point. Do you think managers don't count on home runs in situations? Do you think they go, well, hitting a home run's hard, so not everyone's going to do it?
I think probably what was happening was Bochy was reading too much into some sample size, because there was some chicanery there. And I'm just saying chicanery because I like saying chicanery.
It's a great word.
Lopez, if I'm remembering right, hadn't allowed a hit to a right-handed batter yet this year.
Yeah, like nine plate appearances or something. Yeah.
Yeah, in like nine or 10 plate appearances. So Bochy was probably counting on that. He's like, well, the first one's not going to be a homer. Because, I mean, what are the odds of that?
Excellent, Bochy.
Excellent, because Javier Lopez is not good against anyone, but especially right-handers, as has been shown through his entire career. Now that he's bad against left-handers, it doesn't really stand to reason that he'll suddenly somehow be good against righties.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like, I'm going to cast my lot with the veterans, Bochy coming out, where he thought, well, Javier Lopez hasn't been good except in this one way, so I'm going to give him an opportunity to stay good in this one way, and hopefully it doesn't burn me. But there's definitely a great gif floating around from that 13-11 game where Bruce Bochy looked like a little boy who had been like, his parents forgot to pick him up after practice or something. He just looked beside himself and disconsolate on the bench. And that was pretty much that A's series. Let's drift a little bit into the Diamondbacks series. The Giants won it they won two out of three games, and they looked fine, except the bullpen still looked pretty shaky. In two of the games, it cost them a win, and it definitely forced extra innings in the third game of the series. So I'm just going to draw a bigger connective thing here and say, if the Giants make it to the postseason, I think we know what their undoing is going to be, because I do not see this going away now that we are 3 months into the season. These are basically the same guys from the beginning, and they really have basically been streaky, and that's bad. I would say it's hard to find consistency in any major league bullpen, but when you intentionally have the bullpen at 12 guys, or if you intentionally carry 12 pitchers and you basically have seven or eight relievers and like one and a half of them are good, you've got a problem.
I mean, that's the kind of thing the Giants are trying to compensate for with playing matchups. And to an extent, that works. But at some point, they're going to be able to pinch hit a lefty against George Contos. And it's going to be like, oh, crap. You know, you can't just throw Osich in there, the first lefty that somebody faces. You can't throw Lopez in there at all, basically. He's on the roster like as a gift, as charity. I'm not sure why, still.
It's interesting because it feels like they're being more loyal to the pitching veterans as opposed to the offensive veterans, the heroes over the years. Contos probably should go if they trade for someone and he's not part of the deal, he should be the guy who loses his roster spot if we're talking about them trading for a reliever. And I wonder if it's because he's been around that they're, since 2012, that he's the guy they're going to keep. And for the reason you're saying, like,
it's
they're
entirely
just
like, possible.
And I wonder why the pitching, you know what, let's not overthink this too much. They've been healthy. They're nice guys. They're able to get outs maybe 51% of the time now, but they've been remarkably consistent for a long time. And I think the Giants have, like a lot of teams, but perhaps more than most, are willing to see if guys can find it again. And that just might be the case here.
That's true. And it's kind of been what Bo's done in his career. So if you look at the bullpen problem in the Diamondback series, it was Osich who came in and walked his only batter, a lefty, on four pitches, and then Strickland gave up a home run. But then the next game, they were like the bullpen heroes.
They locked it down. Yeah.
Strickland came in the ninth, had a good inning. Osich came in the 10th, had a great inning. And, Casilla in the 11th was really shaky. He was nervous. He made us all scared. He got it done in the end, but it was really Strickland and Osich who were the ones who came in and did a great job there. So I think that's kind of what Bruce Bochy does, veteran or not, that he'll keep giving you those chances to tell you, yes, I still believe in you. Yes, I think you can do it. I mean, that helps a pitcher on an individual level. If the pitcher can't do it anymore, like Javier Lopez, then it does not help anyone.
Yeah, and I agree. I kind of think that that bounce back appearance by both those guys is, that's like a plus 10 in trust, essentially. They had the thing you want from a reliever where the last appearance didn't. They don't think about it. They just go back out there and play their game again. But it's interesting how, like, the worst – both those guys on Saturday night did the worst thing that they could have done in both those situations. That two guys doing the worst possible thing, that is, like, it's reliever – there's reliever inconsistency, and there's just bad relief pitching. And that was just objectively bad. Hunter Strickland's pitch had no business being thrown. A pitching machine would not have thrown that pitch because it was so bad. The pitching machine is better programmed than that pitch. And I do not mind saying that because I've been blocked by Hunter Strickland on Twitter. I've also been blocked by Sergio Romo, I found out today.
Oh.
He will be making a return to the Giants bullpen, he already has. And I have to say that I am extraordinarily relieved that he is back.
It's good to see Romo back, even though he's also blocked me on Twitter, and I'm not sure why. Like, I know why Strickland does. I know it's because Hunter Strickland vanity searches on Twitter. But Romo, I've looked through my tweets, and I have no idea.
Well, so, I know that I've definitely made comments about he's given up like a game-winning home run, and I've been like, well, Sergio Romo, he came in and threw his pitch, or basically talking something along the lines of like it didn't even matter, it didn't even happen. And you want a reliever to think that they're always the best. We should point out that Hunter Strickland, after that Saturday night loss, that he put on his Instagram, wolves are not bothered by the opinions of sheep, that message, that image. I just thought that was so funny. This is a pro-Giants podcast, so obviously there's no point in doing that and going any further with this. But I guess it's a good thing that Hunter Strickland has that mentality, that he thinks we are all garbage and he's awesome, because it is the only way that he can psych himself up into going out there and being awesome after he's been garbage.
That's true. I will say, I don't exactly want the people I'm rooting for to think that Tywin Lannister is a good guy, because that's a Tywin Lannister quote. But hey, Hunter, if that's what you need to psych yourself up, then you do you.
Other comps, though, I mean, that means his kid's going to kill him on the toilet. Which I could totally see with the crossbow. I can totally see that happening.
There will be at least 8 crossbows in Hunter Strickland's house right now.
He keeps one under his pillow just in case. That's why he's always cranky.
I will say we shouldn't maybe talk about his other 2 kids and what they're going to do.
No, that would be.
This is a family podcast.
But I think this was something, you know, it's really frustrating to lose a game in the way the Giants did on Saturday. But at the same time, it was a Saturday night game in Arizona. And the Giants, you know, lost it late to a home run. You know what? That's going to happen. Arizona has, at times, it plays more offensive than Coors Field does. The ball jumps out of there. That was a Jeff Samardzija start. A home run had to be given up in that game. It just sucks that it wasn't Jeff Samardzija who gave it up. It was Hunter Strickland late in the game. So all things considered, it was not great, but the Giants are not going to sweep every series. And the fact that they came back the next day, and even after the bullpen pushed them into extra innings, they were still able to come back and win. Ramiro Pena, who? Helping them out there. I like Ramiro Pena because more than most of the depth guys the Giants have accumulated over the last decade, he's had like some solid major league experience. Like to me, he sort of fell into that nexus of he could be like a Martin Prado or like Omar Infante before he became the Omar Infante we all know and hate now. Or, you know, just like he seemed to have some sort of actual utility to him. And he's a switch hitter, which I also am very high on. But, you know, he's 29, but he missed the season. He's not fantastic, but I mean, it just seems like out of all the things that the Giants would need in a utility player, this is essentially like good Emmanuel Burris, who himself, to be fair, seemed to have turned it around this year and really impressed the Giants. But this seems like the guy the Giants have been trying to find for a few years. And hopefully, it's only 37 plate appearances, so really it's like nothing. But, you know, maybe this is kind of a guy that they can count on going forward.
Yeah, no, it'd be great if they had a backup infielder who could play a bunch of positions and play them pretty well. For all Kelby Tomlinson's virtues, he's not especially good in the field. Especially if he doesn't have consistent playing time. So if Pena can get out there and have solid defense and be at least decent at the plate, I know he's been great so far, but let's just take a stab at this and say he's not going to continue to hit .417.
No.
I mean, it'll be like .405 at the best.
Yeah.
Then yeah, he could be a really good utility infielder for the Giants, which is something that they've needed. Their bench was, it seemed like a pretty big weakness coming into the year.
Also, Gregor Blanco, he keeps getting hurt, and his streakiness, it's not really kicking in the way that we all expect with Gregor Blanco.
Right.
So as a pinch hitter, perhaps, I think it's always tough. I think it's tough to be a pinch hitter in Major League Baseball, so the idea of being good from year to year seems absurd to me. And guys who have been able to do it in any measurable way haven't really been that great. You know, they've been okay because pinch hitting is very hard. But if the Giants can get a guy who can both stay healthy, play the infield, and pinch hit for them, and as a switch hitter, I mean, that's great. Those are all things that you would hope for. If he's basically the infield version of Angel Pagan, hey, what a great find. In any case, I'm focusing too much on one guy. The point is, the Giants went 3-4 during the week, and they kind of cobbled together the wins that they got. In a lot of ways, we're kind of skipping over the pitching performances. I think the pitching starters and relievers all the way around wasn't particularly great this week, which is not so bad. Your pitching's going to go through good and bad stretches. You know, Bumgarner, you know, he was pretty good, and then he kind of was all right. And then Cueto was all right. He had 9 strikeouts, although he gave up 2 home runs and 4 earned against the Diamondbacks. But just kind of an eh week, and definitely the flaws were a lot brighter and more obvious than the pluses.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, those weeks are going to happen in any year. Sometimes you're just going to be embarrassed in three straight games by your cross bay rivals.
Yeah, and I think it's important that the Giants can still score, and if one of the two sides are working, you know, you basically just don't want to go into long losing streaks. Yeah, the Dodgers are now right there at five games, but that was the way we always knew it was going to be that way. Anyone who was thinking that they were going to run away with the division if they got up to eight games was crazy. I mean, it would be crazy if the Dodgers just fell off completely like that, because they really can just pay for fixes. And we're getting into that time of the year.
It would be funny, but crazy.
Yes. Now, I guess we should talk about 4th of July. We're not going to be able to cover yesterday's game because we're recording it right as it's about to start. But that was the Giants win, 14-0. It was great. Great start by Bumgarner. In any case, Jake Peavy's start on 4th of July was really solid, was a great start. That was like Jake Peavy pitching in 2014 and for most of 2015. And in a lot of ways, how he's pitched this year, too. And then a monster shot from Buster Posey. If you were watching the ESPN telecast, it was Dave Fleming, who was actually the play-by-play guy for ESPN. And he definitely broke his national impartiality when Buster Posey hit that home run. It was pretty great. And then Angel Pagan hit a home run left-handed or right-handed, and he smacked the crap out of that, too. It was a great, solid win against the Rockies, which you hope to see instead of those devastating come-from-behind losses that the Rockies seem to pull out at Coors Field.
Yeah, no, it was really good to see. And I mean, the interesting, the wind was blowing out, and Jake Peavy still only gave up one run, and that was on a stupid balk. And it was really just good to see, you know?
So
it's not good to see Jake Peavy committing a stupid balk, but
it was a very stupid balk.
He shouldn't trust his eyes. He's probably learned that lesson now.
It feels like people are trying to copy Cueto on the staff. I think a reliever, I can't remember who it was. It wasn't Contos. It might have been Guerin. They have shown a quick pitch here and there in the last couple of weeks. So I wonder if Peavy was trying to do that, like the Peavy version of a quick pitch. But another thing about the balk, another thing I noticed about him, we've mentioned this before. You mentioned this in one of your last post-gamers, and we talked about on the podcast that Peavy's kind of pitching backwards, but yesterday Monday I noticed that he was like a Red Sox pitcher on the mound. He was taking an enormous amount of time between pitches, and that might have been him trying to work out what he was going to throw with Posey, or I think more likely he really was just doing everything he could to upset the hitter's timing.
Yeah, it seemed like it, and it seemed like it was working, because that's that veteran savvy that we all used to make jokes about before the Giants won three World Series, and we're like, okay, they're smarter than us. We can at least lay out one of these stupid jokes. We have like 40 others.
So it'll be interesting to see if he keeps that up. The Rockies have given him a lot of trouble, obviously, this year especially. So that could have been, you know, special delivery or a special plan for the Rockies, because, you know, they want to get up and hit him as quickly as they can, so he's going to slow it way down. Or if it's just another part of his game, maybe as his hair gets longer, his time between pitches gets slower. I don't know. So actually, 3-4 last week and 1-0 this, or 2-0, because again, they won last night, 14-0. So the Giants are doing well. They have the most wins in baseball right now, and who would have thought? Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? And also, remember, the Giants are only going to win 57 games. So after last night's incredible win, where Gregor Blanco came off the bench for a pinch hit 7-run homer, the Giants are at 54 wins. And so they only have three left this year. So they might not win a game after the All-Star break.
No. They're going to space these out over the next 3 months.
Oh, okay.
That's what's going to happen.
You're the expert.
Yeah. I hope. Okay, so who do you have, or what do you have for the best game of the week?
I'm going to say the July 4th game. You know, Posey hit on the 4th of July. Jake had a great game. There was no bullpen tension. Casilla had a shutdown inning, 1-2-3. It was just a good, solid game all around.
Buster Posey hitting a home run for America on 4th of July. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. I'm going to pick, you know, one of the worst, like, we should forget about this entire series, but I'm going to pick the 12-6 salvage victory against the A's, which was barely a moral victory at that point. But Madison Bumgarner being the DH, getting a double, which started the rally, I'm just going to say that had novelty, it had excitement, and, you know, it ties into what we're going to talk about in a minute here. And it was awesome. And, you know, the A's fans were so happy except for that game. And that was the best. Right. That was the best way to take a little bit of excitement out of mopping the floor with the Giants was a pitcher.
And that was also the game where they were like, God, the Giants are such arrogant jerks. And the Giants are like, no, it works.
So what do you have for the worst game of the week? Is there even a debate? It's the 13-11 worst game in franchise history.
Yeah. is that honestly the worst game since the Spielberg's game?
Oh man. The Spielberg's game has had such heavy playoff implications too. I would say probably. There's some candidates. Maybe we should talk about that next time. That's a great question. That's a great Twitter question, Doug. You should ask them. That's certainly one of the I'll say yes for now. That's true.
Yeah. It seems like it.
Because you can swap out the playoff, but you can swap out the playoff context with the rivalry context. And you can kind of get a similar feeling. Anyway, yeah. Player of the week.
Who do you have? I know mine. It's kind of unfair. I already wrote a whole article about him for yesterday. So,
oh, well, that's great. So yours is Brandon Crawford then.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's a great pick. Brandon Crawford had an amazing week and I would be stupid to side against that. He had a tremendous, week. He's had a tremendous season.
Yeah. And, you know, after yesterday when Addison Russell just said, you know, I don't deserve to be an all-star over Brandon Crawford and gave it up, thought that was very classy of him. and he was right. He didn't deserve that.
That's right. That's right. Magnanimous.
That's definitely something that happened.
so that just, like, pushes us right into our next topic. All-star snubbery. The Giants have been hosed in the all-star voting. If you saw yesterday, or if you're just catching it this morning, Buster Posey in, Brandon Belt out, Madison Bumgarner in, Brandon Crawford out. Addison Russell did not abdicate. Johnny Cueto in, Johnny Cueto's horse dead. We should probably talk about that. His horse Popeye died. It was very sad.
His horse Popeye. All right, Popeye.
And if you didn't catch this, Andrew Baggerly tweeted out that it took 5 minutes between Johnny Cueto, Johnny Cueto's interpreter, and the beat writers to figure out that what Johnny Cueto was saying was that he named his horse Popeye after the fast food chicken chain Popeyes. So that's great. And there was a funny tweet from one of the Reds Twitter people, and they said, just put him in the Hall of Fame already.
I mean, it's a fair point. It is a fair point.
And Johnny Cueto honored his dead horse by posting to his Instagram dead pictures or pictures of said dead horse. So Johnny Cueto thrilling us, shocking us, grossing us out, making us love him all the more. And he's going to be an all-star player. And Bruce Bochy came out and said that he hopes that Cueto starts the game. Even though I think Johnny Cueto's thrown more pitches in the last calendar year than anyone in baseball history. So that'll be an interesting thing if that happens.
I would guess that it'll be Arrieta instead of Cueto, but I do hope that, but Cueto was saying that he hoped that he could throw to Posey before Posey's out of the game, just so he wouldn't have to teach another catcher how to deal with all his tricks. So I hope so too, because that'd be fun to see an all Giants battery.
That would be. But let's focus on sort of the snubs here. Let's start with Brandon Crawford. That's certainly the bigger one, right, Doug?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Brandon Crawford and Corey Seager are the two best shortstops in the NL. Seager's at the game, and he should be. Crawford should be too. It was just Cubs fans kind of turned out and I don't know. Maybe there's nothing better to do in Chicago. Maybe everyone who says Chicago's great is just lying, but they definitely got out there and voted, spent a lot of time voting, and Addison Russell won.
Everyone who says that Chicago's great and they love Chicago are not in Chicago when they say any of that. And so right. They are probably all those people voted. In that case, there's more of those people than people in the United States or people in the actual city of Chicago. So rest in peace, Brandon Crawford, who never played again after this snub. But he has a chance. I'm sure that, you know, usually if you've been alive, you know how the All-Star process goes. Guys are named to the team, and over the next 2 weeks, there's going to be like 50 guys who drop out, and someone's people are going to come up and play, and people are going to come out of retirement and take the spots and whatever it is. So there's a very good chance Brandon Crawford
started short somehow both teams.
That's right. So there's a very good chance Brandon Crawford still makes it on to the All-Star team. Now, going to I think it's really interesting also, though, what I want to, before we finish Brandon Crawford part, the reserves were named by the players. So I think it's really interesting that the players don't think Brandon Crawford is good enough to be an All-Star.
There was actually a Giants beat writer who tweeted Brian and said that they released the vote totals for the leader. And so like Nolan Arenado, who won the players vote, got 780 something votes, and Seager, who won the players vote, got 400 and something. So it's probably fair to say that a lot of those other votes went to Crawford. It wasn't that disrespectful. Stop stirring people up.
Well, it's pretty disrespectful. Corey Seager's been around for a minute, and Brandon Crawford's been around for quite a while. He's won a bunch of World Series. Like, people have seen him play. They watched him make amazing catches in the World Series. And nope. So let's talk about the other guy, because Brandon Crawford only has a chance basically for injury replacement. Let's talk about Brandon Belt. Also kind of a snub. I always think first baseman, it's really tricky. And I think you and Grant both wrote about this on the site at some point, right? That basically, you know, Fernando Rodney getting traded from the Padres is going to screw Brandon Belt. That was the prediction, because the lone Padres representative could have been him, but now it's Will Myers, who's going to be the backup first baseman. Will Myers, who's not even a major league fielder of any sort of any note, is still going to be the backup first baseman. So out goes Brandon Belt, who's having his best season. And it's a bit of a shame, but he is the next, he is the final vote, and he's going to go up against a bunch of other players. So the fans have a chance one last time to vote in a guy, and that's going to be tough. Who's going up against?
Yeah, it's a tough vote. I will say that with Belt, it's not as much of a snub as much as Will Myers is personally kind of annoying.
Yes.
And on the Padres, he has been having a very good year offensively.
Yes.
And for some reason, the defensive stats hate Belt, so he's not getting any credit there. And then Rizzo is great, and Goldschmidt is Paul Goldschmidt. And you can't really complain about either of them making it over Belt. So it's, you know, you want him to make it. I want him to make it. I hope he wins the final vote, but I'm not quite as annoyed at the entire universe that he's not already on the team as I am with Crawford.
Well, Crawford, yeah, for sure. But Belt's going to be going up against Jake Lamb of the Diamondbacks, who, if he and Nolan Arenado only played the Giants, they would be in the Hall of Fame after their second season.
Like, they would build a new Hall of Fame for them.
That's right. Ryan Braun, Starling Marte, and Trevor Story. Now, Trevor Story should automatically be disqualified because this is the Yasiel Puig situation all over again.
The Puig situation?
When Puig was, everyone wanted Puig on the All-Star team through his first half season, remember? And there was this huge damn stink about, well, he hasn't done anything and blah, blah, blah. This is Trevor Story.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's exciting. You know, he's fun, but Crawford should be there over him.
Right.
Or Belt should be there.
So, you know, Lamb, I think.
Lamb should be there over him.
Yeah, I think Lamb, though, it's funny when you start talking about all-stars for Major League Baseball, because there are definitely a lot of great, there are a lot of good players and certainly few great players, but when you start putting them all against each other, you're like, oh, that guy's good. Oh, that guy's good too. Oh, he's good too. And it sort of gets into this muddled mess, and then you remember, oh, it's the all-star game. They're all good. Yeah, it's going to happen. So, you know, we love Brandon Belt. I love Brandon Belt. Brandon Belt's having a deserving all-star season, and then you just get into this whole, who's he going up against? Well, all these guys are good. But again, I think Trevor Story has no business being there. And it's interesting that the white man, Trevor Story, is not getting the same scrutiny that Yasiel Puig did. So
it's true. That is true.
Because this was the exact argument that people were making about Puig. Anyway. So,
and you're not going to hear it at all here other than from you.
That's right. That's right. So we'll see what happens with the All-Star game. I would say the 2012 All-Star game is the greatest All-Star game for Giants fans ever, though. It's going to be impossible to top that.
It is. That one was spectacular and fun. And
I can't even. Yeah, I don't. That was the All-Star game that I had wanted my entire life. I'm not kidding.
And it finally happened.
I mean, I thought it would happen with like Will Clark and Kevin Mitchell and Rick Rushel for some reason. But there we are. So, you know, but it happened. And Matt Williams. But it happened with who we got, which were great.
Yeah. Matt Cain, Buster Posey, Pablo Sandoval, and Melky Cabrera.
That's right. Remember him? All right. Now, we have a very special guest joining us now for the Croncast. It's the first time we've ever gotten an active player on the roster to appear on the show, and we're very grateful to have him. Doug joined me in welcoming our guest this week, probably our only guest that we're ever going to have from the team after this week.
Yeah.
But this is fake Jeff Smarja. Fake Jeff Smarja.
Oh, fake Jeff Smarja. It's so good of you to join us. How's the game going? That's going on right now.
Well, you know, it's an honor. It's an honor to be here. You know, the game's going on. Some pitches are happening. You know, I'm with my teammates, and you know, it's gonna be fun. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see if anything flies over the wall. You know.
So how do you like being on the Giants, fake Jeff?
Oh, the Giants are—they're great. I love the uniform. I didn't think I'd like clean tones, but turns out I look really sharp in them. Really sharp, and the Bay Air is really good for my sinuses, and the air surprisingly is really good at helping a lot of my pitches get elevation, It's pretty cool. And everything's really expensive, which, you know, being from Chicago, the greatest city on earth, I think that's great. Yeah.
I'm glad. So talk to me a little bit about home runs. Do you know why you give up so many home runs?
Oh, well, home runs, you know, one of my biggest beliefs as an American is freedom. And in my estimation, home runs are like a symbol of freedom that you cannot replicate anywhere else. It's the most nonviolent form of protecting our way of life in a lot of ways. So to me, a home run, you know, it's fun to watch the ball go so far, you know, because I was throwing it and then it's over my head and then it's over everyone else's head and then it's over the fence. It's just cool.
Can you remember back to the very first home run you ever gave up? What was that like?
Oh, well, yeah, I can remember that. I was in my backyard, and I was using one of our couch cushions as like a strike zone. And I remember, you know, as a backstop for the ball. And I remember I was trying to throw it inside to the imaginary batter that I was picturing in my mind's eye, and it leaked out right over the plate, and wouldn't you know it, that imaginary hitter, he crushed it easily 400 feet, went into the street, it caused a massive pileup, but that was, and an ice cream truck overturned, and that was fun. We got a lot of ice cream that day, so.
The all-time record for home runs given up in a single season is 50, and it's held by Hall of Famer Burt Blyleven.
Oh, I'm going to beat that. I'm going to beat that for sure. All right. I have a lot of goals for the season, and that's definitely been one of them.
All right, so you're not going to settle for just the NL record, which is held by Jose Lima. It's 48. You're going to go the whole thing?
Well, you know, I respect the memory and the legacy of Jose Lima. I'm a big believer in Lima time. I think Lima time is emblematic of human freedom, just like home runs. And I wish I could dance like Jose Lima, to be perfectly honest. But you know, I'm gonna beat his record. I'm gonna take it to him, and it's gonna be me on top at the end of the day.
All right, and the all-time major league record is 522 for a career. It's held by Jamie Moyer. Do you think you can come close to that, or is he just such an all-time great that that's untouchable?
I don't know. I ran into Jamie the other day. It's interesting, you know, and it was funny because everyone that was coming up to him while we were having a conversation, you know, little twerps, little 3 or 4 year old kids, boys and girls, the infirm wheeling up in their chairs or on their walkers. Everyone was saying, "Hey, Moy boy," that's what they called him. They would, they were saying, "I could take you deep," and he knew it. He knew they could. But he pitched for a long time. I don't know if I'm going to pitch that long. But if I do, I'm going to take him down. I'm going to take the record down.
Okay. Do you know what the longest is that you've ever gone without allowing a home run?
Well, you know, I kind of like to think that the home run that Hunter gave up the other night was sort of like an honorarium, I think they're called, or like he was basically deferring to me, the veteran, and doing that for me. But that was the longest it's ever been for me. I think I've gone, you know, one game without ever giving up a home run.
And finally, do you have anything you'd like to say to your detractors, or, as I say nowadays, the haters?
Well, to my tractors, I'd say, I'll be home soon, boys, and we've got a lot of road to hoe. To my haters, I would say, well, you know, I'm here and you're not. That's what
Truer words have never been spoken. Fake Jeff, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks a lot, Grant. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Jeff Samardzija. Thanks.
Thank you to Fake Jeff Samardzija. Yeah, that was really great of him to join us.
That was great. Hopefully all that audio editing I did in post made him sound as Jeff Samardzija as possible. Fake Jeff Samardzija. All right. Let's close it with some Twitter questions and then enjoy the 14-0 schlacking the Giants are giving the Rockies right now.
Okay. So the first question we have is from Calbear at Calbear949. How does the signing of Kevin Durant help the Giants pitching staff?
So glad we can talk about this.
Finally, we can talk about Kevin Durant.
That's right. Do you remember when Durant was in the booth back in 2013? I remember it very well because I'm like, I want Kevin Durant on the Warriors very badly. And he likes baseball. And he even had that quote where he loved Buster Posey's intensity and he likes the way he goes about his business. He's like, I know everyone has the talent, but I want to know about the mental side of the game. Plus, he was probably with someone who was very focused and intense in a non-scary way, which apparently Russell Westbrook is like. So I think Kevin Durant's going to help the Giants bullpen by at least a run. He's going to shave a run off that ERA.
Oh, I thought he was going to help them give up one less run just on the year, which also would have been good. But I like shaving a run off the ERA, for sure.
It'd be fun if he played first base or third base and he'd just run up and start smacking the ball down after it was hit. There's nothing that says you can't do that.
No, that's true. Totally legal play.
That's right.
So Kevin Durant is going to play first base, Cal Bear, and he's going to smack the ball down as soon as it's hit. That is the answer to your question.
He's going to be a great rim protector for the Giants.
Next question comes from at @scout_6, who is, I believe, a mod on McCovey Chronicles.
Yes.
He asked, is Jarrett Parker deliberately injuring players so his friends from the minors have roster spots?
I didn't see that question. Yes, of course he is.
He is, yeah. He's blaming it on Mac, too, which is the real diabolical.
That's right. Poor Mac Williamson. He looks like a guy you could blame stuff on.
Yeah, he's just so nice.
He's so handsome too, but in that way that you think you can get away with something, but like he's not sharp or something. Let's talk for just a second. Jarrett Parker's playing extremely well, and I'm very glad to see that. And I'm a little bit surprised. And I have to say that I have clearly seen him laying off of off-speed pitches, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, no, he has been. It's been great to see. It's been very impressive because he's never done that in his life. And this is a good time to start.
That's right. And Mac Williamson, speaking of him, he had a solid week, and I really hope that Bochy continues the trend of not platooning him. Certainly the injuries are mounting, and it's making it easier to not have to do that. But Mac Williamson in his career, minor league, and the sample size is bigger, does not really have a platoon split. And he has been slightly better against right-handers in his career. So I think he should get, you know, as much playing time as possible. But, you know, all the credit to Jarrett Parker for playing so well that it's just like, well, it's not blindingly stupid for him to be in the lineup.
Right. And by the way, we didn't talk about this before. Mac Williamson had a couple balls in Arizona. One of them he hit off the scoreboard. And then he hit one the next day that was a line out to left field. They hit it at 117 miles an hour.
So that's good to see, because that wasn't happening in his first kind of series of call-ups where he was hitting the ball consistently with that authority that we know he's capable of. So great, great. Those guys are getting time to play, and they're making the most of it, which is all you can hope for.
It is all you can hope for. And then the last one I have is from at CoolMudgeon, who asked, did anyone else suffer AIDS-induced dyspepsia this past week? Yes, absolutely. It's still happening. It was not the 40 pounds of awful food I ate on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I don't. That A series was one for the ages in terms of how bad it was. I'd be hard pressed to think of a greater disparity between the team heading into that series and the team that played in the series. And it was not that the A's had the Giants number. It was that the A's made it so that the Giants had no right existing.
The Giants were finally the team that Brian always says they are.
They really were. They were really bad. It was just shocking to see. And you know, the A's offense is kind of bad. it had been playing okay in the week or two heading into that series, so that could have been something. But even when the teams have both been good or both been bad, they tend to still play each other fairly even. But this was like, I'm trying to think this was like last year's Toronto Blue Jays playing a single A team from 1985. This was like not, there's no comparison. It was bad. Yeah, I'm pretty upset still. I have one question I caught. It was kind of asked when we didn't ask for questions, but I saw it. Why option Suarez the AAA seems like solid bullpen option if he's not going to start? Does this mean Kane is back this week?
So it doesn't mean, my understanding is that Kane's not back this week. Kane's back after the All-Star break, but they optioned him because they only have like two healthy position players and they needed a spot for Romo for him to come back. And Suarez wasn't able to pitch for a few days. So they did that, and they can bring him back after the All-Star break if they want to.
Yeah. I mean, Suarez, certainly he's going to be the next, as soon as they need a starter or anything, he's going to come back very quickly. And yeah, he acquitted himself, or he fared quite nicely. It was pretty great.
He's going to be the new Yusimar Petit, pretty much for sure.
Probably a good thing that that's not Tim Lincecum, because if you've been tracking Tim Lincecum's progress, he has been pitching like the Tim Lincecum we all know. So
yeah,
just had to say. All right, that's a depressing note to end on. So, but I want to alert everyone to that I finally went ahead and created a Twitter account for the McCovey Croncast. It's at Mick Croncast, MC Croncast. And I think, Doug, I'm going to open up a competition here. If anyone wants to submit designs for a logo, I would be very open to that. I don't know about you, unless you have one.
I would absolutely be open to that, yes.
All right, so let's have a logo contest. And you can add it at the McCovey Croncast at the Mick Croncast Twitter handle. We'll also start posting, asking for questions off of that. We'll build it up that way and get going that way. So thanks for listening. Doug, do you have anything to plug? Are you like going to Mars or releasing a movie or dropping an album soon? What's going on with you?
No. If anyone out there is in the Sacramento area, hire me to work for you.
There we go.
That's my
Okay.
plan. Pay me
All right.
money.
You are a fitness model and coder?
Yeah,
Okay. All
exactly.
right.
I, yeah.
So any modeling or coding, hire him. That's great. All right. Great. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. And I'm glad you listened because the Jeff Samardzija, fake Jeff Samardzija interview was definitely, it's going to win us awards, I feel, Doug. It is now.
Peabody's.
Yes. All right, bye.